Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Dawn with us. Dawn, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you, Leticia. I'm so honored to be here with you and with your audience. So a little bit about me. So I have been a nurse for 30 years. I'm an advanced grief recovery method specialist, an author, and a facilitator of women's retreats. So how did I end up here? I'd been in nursing for about 30 years, and I realized something was missing. I wasn't feeling so fulfilled in my career. And I wanted to help people in another way because I had noticed that my clients, my patients, were suffering from physical issues after going through some traumatic times in their lives. Well, not only did I see that with my patients, but I also saw that in my own life, that looking back, I saw how physical issues had come up in my life after I'd experienced transition and trauma. And so I ended up deciding that I was going to do some looking at a program called the Grief Recovery Method. And so I went into a specialist training, and I didn't really think that things in my life had caused me grief, because I looked at grief as the result of a death. And I hadn't experienced many of those except for with a couple grandparents. Well, what I realized first day into this training was I had a significant amount of grief from things that had happened in my life. And I looked back over time, and at the age of 30, I was divorced, and I couldn't figure out how I'd gotten there. It was just really heartbreaking to me that at 30 years old and with a 3.5-year-old son, I was getting divorced. But then I looked back at my life, and when I was 15 years old, I entered into my first significant relationship with a man. And he was very charming. He was 3 years older than me. You know, he was the senior, inviting me to the senior prom. And it seemed amazing. Like, why did this person notice me? And this is great. I'm, you know, going to start dating this man. And he seemed so kind and nice, until he wasn't. And then there was 7 years of abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. And I didn't know how to navigate that. And there was part of me that felt really ashamed that I stayed in that situation. Like, shouldn't I have known better to get out of it? But I didn't. I didn't know how to get out. I was scared. It wasn't something I'd encountered in my life previously. And so, sadly, because I didn't know how to navigate it, I took it into everything else in my life. And as I looked over my divorce and why it happened, I realized that pain from that first relationship that was abusive had made it completely impossible for me to have a healthy relationship with someone moving forward because I hadn't figured out how to do the healing. And so I didn't know how to communicate. I was very reactive. I remember having a counseling appointment with my husband, and he was so upset because he didn't understand why I reacted to things the way that I did and why I didn't feel safe. And he actually said, "I've never done anything to harm you. Why do you not feel safe?" Well, it's because I didn't feel safe in my own body because in that previous relationship, I had learned that I had to constantly monitor everything around me. I couldn't just relax. I had to be aware of what was going on in the room because at any moment, things might change and I might not be safe anymore. And that's what I'd experienced during some of the most formative years of my life when I was a teenager, is that loss of safety. And even to this day, I've done a lot of healing, but that my safety is always my number one priority still to this day. And I feel sad about that in a way because I know that it was those experiences in my childhood that led me to who I am today. And as I look back, how did I get myself into that situation? How did I not see that? But when you meet someone who seems super charming, and when maybe things aren't the best at home, I was growing up with an alcoholic father and an alcoholic stepfather. And so I didn't always feel the most important at home because the priority was on what was the addict doing or not doing, and how do we manage that? And so I looked for that attention elsewhere, and here was this individual that showed up and wanted to give me all this attention, but it was at a price. And that price was my safety. That price was just honoring myself. And I didn't know how to move through that. And so I just stayed and stayed and kept thinking that things were going to get better, but they never did get better. And I noticed over time, the more that I was unwilling to meet his demands or requests, the worse that the abuse got. And I was so wrapped up in all of it that I didn't know anything different. That was normal to me. So it took me meeting my future husband to actually leave that abusive relationship. And I remember at the time when I finally told him, "I'm done, enough is enough," he showed up at my parents' house and was banging on the back sliding glass door trying to get in. And my stepdad came home and told him to get out of there. But I was standing there thinking, he's going to kill me. That's how unsafe I felt. And so, stepping into a new relationship and then a marriage, I didn't have that foundation. It was gone. I was trying to navigate something that felt abnormal because what was normal to me was chaos. And when I didn't have chaos, I'm really sad to say this, but I can now admit I created it because that was what helped me feel better, or so I thought. My nervous system was constantly on. It never relaxed. And it wasn't until later in my life that I was able to realize how horrible it feels to be in constant chaos. It's exhausting, not only emotionally, but physically. And it started leading to some health issues for me that no one could really figure out what was wrong. I just didn't feel good, but there was no diagnosis for any of it. It was just all this stored trauma in my body that I didn't know how to release.
You've mentioned so much here, and we're going to cycle back to, you recognizing that you had a lot of grief in your life through your certifications and further education. But you said so much. As someone who also, my abuse started in my teenage years, still very formative, right? I relate very heavily to the hypervigilance, the craving of chaos, right? Because I learnt very early on that, I mean, it became my norm very early on, and it lasted, my abusive relationship lasted 8 years. So for 8 years, while the very beginning, like you said, Prince Charming, like, wow, ugh, you know, and then you also mentioned how, you know, having toxic environments at home almost pushes you into those relationships. It's because it's almost like the lesser of two evils. It's almost like a ch I know this isn't the best environment, but it's slightly better for me than this one over here. And then having years of hypervigilance. I remember at one point in time, no one could approach me from behind without me almost ready to attack because of, you know, the type of abuse that I went through. And then almost feeling silly when I'm recognizing I'm not unsafe here, but I was always attacked from behind. So for me, it was like, you know, get away, don't come too close. And it's interesting how you also mentioned how you carried, you know, the residual impacts of your trauma into your marriage without actually recognizing that. What would you say as you examined the divorce at 30 with a 3-year-old, 3.5-year-old? What were you would you say were the things that you had to unlearn and relearn coming out of that marriage?
So when we first got divorced, I was completely blaming him. You decided to leave. You didn't want to be married anymore. And I didn't take much ownership. And I didn't really know how to take ownership. I wasn't at the point that I wanted to look at my stuff. And so I had to start unlearning the behaviors of blaming someone else for actions because I had blamed my abuser for the way he treated me, but I hadn't taken any responsibility for the fact that I hadn't chosen to do any healing. I just moved forward. And I think even when we're victimized, we can have that 1% responsibility of we are choosing to not heal. And it's really hard to heal, as any person that's listening to this knows. When you're victimized, it's really hard. It's hard to figure out how the best tools to help you heal. It's hard to think about those things that have happened to you. It's not an easy road, but I needed to start learning that I did have a little responsibility. And I also had a responsibility that I let this affect my marriage. And sadly, I mean, I was with a very safe person, but I didn't feel safe. And that didn't have anything to do with him. That had to do with me. He never harmed me. And so I had to learn that there were safe people moving forward, but I first had to feel safe at home, meaning in myself, not in a physical environment, but inside of me, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm going to ask you to clarify that for the listeners. What had to change in order for you to feel safe at home with self?
I had to do a lot of my own work between counseling and then my grief recovery work, which is really the thing that shifted, a lot of my beliefs and my feelings of not being safe. That really helped me shift some of those because I was viewing the world with a really dark lens and I wasn't able to see anything rose colored. It was everyone was out to get me. Everyone else was at fault. And I didn't see that I had anything to do with that situation. It was somebody else doing it to me.
And that's, that awareness right there, shifting it so that you can take ownership, then allows you to change, to heal, to grow, to move forward, right? I think I've spoken about this. The biggest shift for me was when I had a coach and she called out that I was giving my power away by settling into the identity that I'm a victim. And at first, when she said it, I was really angry at the statement and how she said it to me, right? But as I processed it more, it was that in order for me to move forward, I have to take ownership of me. And it's not saying that someone else's actions didn't impact me, but it's taken ownership again, like you said, on my healing, on the narratives that I was holding about my circumstances, about the narratives I was holding about myself. And the listeners have heard me say this. I believe that there are three phases that we go through in order to exit survival mode. The first one is self-awareness. We cannot change what we cannot see. The second is reprogramming. We have to change the narratives that we're holding on to. And then the third one is reinvention. And that reinvention, to me, is letting go of the victim armor that I carried for so long, right? I believe that our society celebrate surviving, but we aren't readily given the tools to take it beyond survival. I always say, like, survival is not the final destination, thriving is. But a lot of us aren't, don't recognize that we are stuck in survival, and then it shows up in our relationships. It often shows up in work. It shows up in almost every area of our lives until we can take radical ownership, so that we can move forward. Now, when you mentioned the grief earlier, you said, you thought grief was associated with death. Now, what is your new definition of grief, and why was the grief certification so powerful in your healing with that new definition of grief?
Sure. So grief is the normal and natural reaction to any type of loss, transition in our lives. But I think that as society, oftentimes we look at it as it's related to death. Someone's died, so we're grieving. And it's many times the elephant in the room. People don't like to talk about grief. But with trauma, there's grief. And so for me, it shifted everything considerably because I was holding so much inside, things that I'd never talked about, anger and events that had happened. And when we're not allowed or we don't feel safe talking about how we feel about different things that have happened in our lives, it keeps us from healing. And when we have safe spaces to talk about our feelings, and we know that we're being heard, and no one's judging or criticizing us or trying to fix the situation. It's like the first step in our healing. And so, going through this certification and doing my own work and looking at aspects of my life that were causing grief, not only relationship with my dad that was less than what I'd hoped for, but my divorce and my abusive relationship and many things in life. I talk to individuals about even happy events like getting married can be a grieving experience because you're giving up the life you had for a new life. And so you can have those conflicting emotions. I can feel happy and then I can also be sad for the life I'm giving up. So once I was able to look at aspects of my life that had caused me grief and give a voice to those emotions, I was able to start letting go and moving forward. But before then, I'd been to counseling for like 10 years and I'd been talking about the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, but there were no real tools to help me move forward. It was just talking. And so while the talking was slightly helpful, it wasn't getting me over that hump to the other side, to feeling empowered, to thriving again, and being able to let go of some of that pain and that anger so that I could find the joy again in my life. So it really was the work that I did and the work that I now help other people with that I've noticed helps people just move forward in a positive direction instead of staying stuck in that grieving experience or those memories.
I love the new definition, that transition, the loss. I mean, that then expands it to, again, all areas of our lives. And oftentimes we very neatly pack away our experiences and the emotions that are attached to it and just move on, like you said. And a huge part of our healing is being able to process so that we can let go. And then once we can let go, then that gives us the opportunity to redefine how we show up, redefine what it is that we want, and then make a conscious decision to do something different than we've been doing before. So I love that reframe in respect to grief, and I can definitely see how that can be very empowering, particularly as I understand how we tend to just pack things away into neat little packages, and often they don't get re-exposed until we're triggered by something. And then it all kind of like comes out, and you're like, where did all of this emotion come from? Where is all of this? Because it doesn't seem like maybe the event warranted it, but it's simply because we haven't been able to process emotions, our emotions fully.
Yeah, I talk about the backpack that we carry. Like when we're born, our backpack is empty, but then, somebody bullies us at school, a rock goes in it. And then our first romantic breakup, another rock goes in it. And pretty soon, it's so heavy we can't carry it anymore. And that's because we haven't been given tools to help us unpack the backpack. And so you're right. Then one little event shows up, which doesn't seem like our response is warranted, but we react. And we're thinking, why am I reacting like this? This is kind of minor in my life. Well, it's because it's bringing up all those past hurts that are still in the backpack.
Absolutely. So, how do you now work with clients? Do
So,
you work with trauma? Like, what type of clients do you work with?
I work with anybody who is finding themselves kind of stuck in life, not feeling fulfilled, has gone through recent or, a long time ago, some type of transition or grieving event, and just feels like they're not experiencing joy like they would like to because they're stuck. They feel sad. They feel angry. And so I do my work virtually, which is nice because I can work with people all over the world. We do it over 6 to 7 sessions, and I take them through the grief recovery method, which is an action-based tool. It's an educational tool. So what's nice and different from counseling is they meet with me for 6 or 7 sessions, and then they have this tool to use for any transition or loss or grieving event that happens in their life. And they don't need to come back to me. If they want to, they can. Counseling, like I went to a counselor for 10 years and had to keep going back because I didn't have the tools. So this is a wonderful way that people can continue moving forward and processing the different events that happen in their life because we know from the minute we're born until the minute we die, we go through transition.
I love showcasing different modalities on this show simply because, like you said, I was in counseling and therapy for almost a decade. And Mine was initially forced because of a suicide attempt. So I knew I had to show up twice a week. I knew I had to discuss what was going on, and I learned how the sessions flowed, and I knew how to give the very bare minimum just to get through the process. And like you said, I didn't have the tools. I spent years reliving my trauma though. And I would say each time I revisited it, it impacted me less, but I definitely wanted a tool to be able to let go and move on. So I think it's very interesting, the grief recovery. I would not have aligned that with, trauma recovery either, but I think it's great to showcase this for the listeners. So Dawn, I've enjoyed our conversation. How can we find you online?
So my website is dawnmichellejackson.com with one L in Michelle. I'm also on Facebook and I'm on LinkedIn and I have a YouTube channel.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure all of that information is in the show notes. Before we wrap it all up, Dawn, give us one key takeaway for the listeners.
One key takeaway is where you are in your life is only one page of your story. It's not your whole story. There is hope moving forward. And regardless of what's happened to you, there's healing that can happen and your life can change. It just takes that one step of moving forward and asking for support and being willing to open yourself up.
The willingness to change has to supersede the willingness to stay the same. But when you are willing, I do believe that, you can find the support that you need to be able to thrive in your life. Dawn, thank you so much for your time on
Thank
Survival
you.
Mode Disrupted. And listeners, thank you for catching another episode. I want to remind you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.